Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Nick DiMatteo, and welcome to Music Is Not a Genre's Podfast. Oh, what the? Oh, God. Okay. All right. Podfast. Yes. I understand you're nervous about this episode because it's a weird one, but can you please? Oh, God. Okay. Thank you. Oh, man. I wouldn't say painful, but a little scary, you know, to be trapped like that. Anyway, this is the 18th Podfast, and it's a pretty special one because it's something I've never really done before. I used to, when I did my Music Is Everything subseries, Music Is Not a Genre, I would write essays and read them. I haven't done that in a long time because I'm formatting this differently. I've kind of figured a lot of things out. But this podcast, we're going to kind of revert to that because I've got something special to talk about here. And let me do a little preface and then we'll get right into it. Lately, I've been talking more about how music careers, all of them, involve a cost-benefit analysis. Whether you're a superstar, you're making a living but not a superstar, or barely making any money at all, every musician has to assess and reassess whether it's worth it to continue every freaking year usually. And if so, in what capacity? You know, especially as an indie artist. All artists need money one way or another. Money to create, money to live. Some creation costs money, some's free, but you still need to be living while you're doing it. Most of us, most artists in the world do not make enough to live. They don't make much at all. And so we have to supplement our incomes. And we do that with other jobs. Or worse yet, we're urged to ask for money from fans, friends and family, people who often have as little money as we do. And here's the thing. I don't like asking. And this is the, by the way, this is not, PodFest is not about like a, you know, pledge drive. And not really. You know, I mention it now, patreon.com/musicisnotagenre or recarea.bandcamp.com, because those are ways to support what I do where you get something back as well. And you know, everybody is asking for this. So I know money's tight for everyone, but it, you know, even $5 a month, or honestly, give me $5 a year. It still makes a difference. It really does. But that's not what this is about. It's in sort of a tangential way. It's this, because honestly, as artists or whatever you are, even if you're like saving for a honeymoon, people hate to ask other people for money. And if you have one more Kickstarter or GoFundMe or whatever else is going on out there, everybody's already bombarded with this stuff. It's why I don't do those anymore and haven't since I worked with a film company years ago, and that didn't work that well either, even before there was a glut. But I still have the Patreon. I still have the Bandcamp, because there still has to be a way to kind of get something kind of helping out to support this, because this takes time and effort for me, you know, from other things that I could be doing, although I absolutely love doing music and podcasts more than anything else. So what this episode is about is this. A couple of years ago, I gave this a lot of thought, and I realized that there is a pretty radical solution to all this for all of us, where we don't have to keep giving each other money. And I called it the $50,000 manifesto. I like that word because it sounds like it's a crazy dude, you know, and it was fun. And it's on my website. There's a link to the entire manifesto. I did it in like Times New Roman and made it like a crinkle paper kind of look on the website so that it would be like this. I found this in a suitcase in a cabin or whatever. It was kind of fun. And I published it in 8 parts on social media, I think in 2022. There's now a T-shirt that says the graphic from those social posts, give me $50,000. It's on, this is a shirt from my store, by the way. It's the rec, classic rec band line drawing. I have 29, 30 shirts, whatever, up there, and a bunch of mugs, and 5 different cuts of shirt in two colors. So 10 shirts, say, give me $50,000. And there's a mug that says, give me $50,000. And I plan on doing a little bit more with that this year just for fun. I don't own that shirt because I need more support in order to buy my own shirts. Basically, this was a gift from Cheryl. Thank you. And I plan on getting give me $50,000 at a certain point because it's something I would love to wear out and see what kind of response people get. But it is a shirt and there's a link there if you'd like to get one of those or look at it. It might sound radical what I'm going to read and outrageous. And based on our current condition of economy and life and the structure of things, it is. But it's not unprecedented. Not historically and not in, and not even, you know, philosophically in terms of the ideas that I'm putting forth. Plenty of countries and plenty of eras have implemented this solution. So for this podcast, I'm going to read that manifesto in full. And I'll explain at the end why and how it connects to music, to a podcast about music, to a show about music, and what, if anything, you can do about it. Because you might, there might be nothing for you to do about this except spread the word, which would be great because then I'm not asking you for money, you know. This is an episode like no other, by the way. So disclaimers, you know, this is half fun and full earnest. As one of my favorite authors said, I mean everything I say, but I'm also having fun with it. I'm not a fan of Ted Kaczynski, so, you know, chill on that. I think the only reason why this is considered ridiculous in any way, because I would be dead surprised if anybody actually took me up on this offer. Give me $50,000. But otherwise, all the ideas I propound, they're deadly serious, you know. By the way, if you are poor, i.e. have no discretionary income or having trouble making ends meet, what I'm reading is for you as much as it is for me. It's not a call to action in terms of giving money for you at all. But everything else about it is. If you're middle class, this is also for you. You might have a little money to give, a little Patreon, a little Bandcamp. That's fine. And I love it. And thank you. I'm grateful for all of it. But this is more about a call to action. Again, if you're rich, this is for you. This entire thing is for you. We, as a community, are talking to you. We're talking to you. Shirts and mugs for sale. Here you go. Manifesto verbatim. Number one, the system is broken. This is a story slash challenge in eight parts and a conclusion. Two notes before we get to this. I'm not going to name names or give enough detail for anybody to be identified, and this will not go where you think it's going to go. And I welcome any and all feedback. Bottom line, the system is broken. Follow me and you'll see. Number two, what does $50,000 mean to you? How do you respond to that number? How you respond says a lot about who you are, what your financial situation is, and how you relate to the world. I talked with a friend recently about their job. They described a successful business run by an out-of-touch boss for whom they were doing work above and beyond their position just to keep things going. One glaring deficiency was in money management. The boss had unpaid bills months old, despite having plenty of money to cover them. That wasn't the issue. In fact, my friend said the boss had upwards of, you guessed it, $50,000 sitting in various accounts and doesn't even know or care that it's there because that's how much money he has. How does this make you feel? That's a sum that could drastically change some people's lives. I know it could change mine. For others, a five-figure sum is like a $100 bill. Nice to have. It makes a difference, but not a huge impact on your financial health. And for others, it's like a penny. $50,000, you don't miss it. You don't care if it's gone. It makes absolutely no impact to you. Which group are you in? The one where it makes a huge impact, where it's nice to have, but you don't necessarily need it, or the one where you don't even care if it's there or not? Because if you're in the last group, this is for you. Again, it's a broken system, and we're the system, so we're broken. We're broke because we're part of the system, let's be honest. Part three, where do you go when you need money? At some point in almost everyone's life, they need financial help. Almost everyone in the world. It might be to pay a bar tab or for rent or for unexpected bills, medical, car repairs, house repairs, etc. If kids need something, we all do our best to take care of ourselves. We do. No matter what anybody says, all the crap people say about bootstraps and all that crap, most people in the entire world in history have wanted to take care of themselves and be self-sufficient. It's just true. But it's reassuring to know that when times are tough, something's there to help, whether it's a relative or a loan or the government. You know, the world needs help always. Always. There's more people in the world who need some sort of help than not, and whether it's financial or otherwise. Now, I'm a creative freelancer, one way to call it, which almost by definition means at some point I've been on unemployment several times, actually. I'm grateful it's there. And at the same time, I'm looking for work that makes it unnecessary because I don't want to be on it, but I'm happy it's there. I've also borrowed money from friends and family. I've also asked them to invest in me, and I hate doing that too. These are people who might be marginally better off than I am at that moment, but aren't so rich that the money is insignificant. And I don't like asking people who don't have just money to burn for money, but it's happened. We've done it. So many of us have done it through our lives. And like so many of us, I've done the Kickstarters. I've done the GoFundMes, but way back. And it's another way of asking for money from the same people, which seems reasonable. Someone else has money. You don't. You ask for it. You're done. We help each other. End of story, right? Wrong. What's the wrong sound? Wrong. So as of the writing of this, the month before, I was chosen by a recording studio to develop, record, and promote my next album, which, by the way, is coming out in 2024 in the spring or summer, Kite to Camden. My hope with this was that the recording studio's part in the process would be to raise money from people who have it and want to fund the arts. It makes the most logical sense. No, instead, that company asked me to solicit money from all of my quote-unquote contacts, which again, fans, friends, family, people who have already supported me for years and years, as if they haven't given enough, as if they have money to burn again. Now, I'm sure that the studio and the people are wonderful. I'm not going to name them. Seem like great people. I'm sure they do great work, and I understand their approach, but I declined the offer because that's part of a broken system, asking those same people over and over for money again. Part four, where should we really go when we need money? If it's not those people, friends, family, whatever, where should we go? We've been conditioned, all of us, to quote-unquote stay in our lane. When we need money, and let's say we've exhausted all other options, public and government options, I mean, so we aren't eligible for rent relief or unemployment or anything like that, whatever else, workers' comp, stuff like that, then we look for what? Loans. Or we just amass credit debt. Many of us are familiar with amassing credit debt and paying off loans. So we incur a penalty for asking for money to help us live. And the UBI, Universal Basic Income, that's a whole different issue. It's not even part of this, but I think it deserves mentioning because enough cultures have done it in the past and even now to where it just makes the most sense. But let's set that aside. When public and government options and loans and credit cards fail or run out, we immediately go to people in our peer group, fans, friends, and family. Again, these are people for whom this amount of money still matters. We don't, a lot of us aren't related to or know a lot of people for whom money doesn't matter. It's just true. So why do we do this? Why do we ask for money from people in relatively similar life situations? Partly, it's because those are the people we know. We have access to people, but mostly it's because just like about every industry and business in the world, the people with real money have way more than they will ever need and have no interest in doing anything life-changing with it if it doesn't involve them, their circle, their business, or at least some hope of return on investment. I mean, understandable on a certain level, because if it's not a part of your life, why do you care? But then what is charity? It's been said that this is one of the worst times in history for charity and for the basic compact contract that we have in society that we've had for thousands of years, that the people with more would give to the people with less. That's not a given anymore. Yet these are the people we should be getting money from. Power is hungry. It will take whatever it can. It also shifts. Time was when club owners booking a music act would by default pay that act, pay them pretty well, then promote the act to get in people for their club. As many patrons as possible. The musician's job would be to bring some fans, play the music, and keep the people there. Then things shifted. Clubs stopped guaranteeing more than a free beer for pay They stopped promoting beyond a post or two. They started expecting musicians to do all the heavy lifting, to expect nothing in return, and to be grateful for the opportunity. In fact, now most clubs ask musicians to pay to play there. As if, and we hear this all the time, the joy of creation, the joy of doing what you do should be all the reward you need. No, that's demeaning. We should all be paid for what we do, especially the people who are working their asses off to make it seem easy and enjoyable and good. System is broken, but we can change it. We can shift it again. Things shift. We can shift it again. Part five, why is your life valuable and what do you deserve? Big questions. We've been conditioned to believe that our primary day to week to year value comes from the work we do and the money we earn, which is why so many people look down on the underemployed or homeless. They don't deserve a good life because they haven't earned it. But what if we don't need to earn it? What if just the act of existing and doing our best to be good people is enough? We're worthy within ourselves, regardless of the work we do. We don't have to be quote-unquote productive members of society. A couple of the songs in my new album, Kite to Camden, are about this, but in a circumspect way, so they're enjoyable. What if work was not measured by how much you make, but by how much you love it, and or what you contribute, tangibly or not, to the betterment of the world? And what if money didn't matter? What if it was just there for you to use, like the UBI, to eat and pay rent, and yes, even enjoy some finer things? People who say, people who are on assistance and then go buy, you know, a watch or things that they don't need and they get pissed at them. I'm like, do you want these people to enjoy life at all? At all? Do you want, I feel the same way when money's tight. I always set aside the tiniest bit for some kind of enjoyment because it's not just about existing and paying bills. The work ethic is bullshit, as is the American dream. Examine 1,000 people and you'll find that the amount of work they do almost never corresponds to the amount of money they make, especially today where we have people doing two jobs for the price of one. Productivity is this word that we use as if it means anything more than work your people harder for less money. In fact, the richest people need to do next to nothing to make the most money compared to the mass of us who need to do the most to barely make any money, barely make ends meet. And since the, again, American dream is based largely on the work ethic, social mobility, work hard and you'll move up in the world, then that means the American dream is bullshit too. America is not the land of equality in any way, but aspirational. We can all aspire and dream to be equal with the people we want to be equal with. But as far as how it functions, no. It's run on a class system, like most societies have been. The mass of us were compelled to stay in our lane, to soak our peers over and over again. Give me more money. Help me out. The people who can afford it the least, and to leave the upper classes alone, to leave the rich people alone, the business owners, the big business owners, I mean, not small, alone. But we deserve better. We deserve our base needs met regardless of the work we do. UBI, people. And we deserve to be paid for doing what we love, not just to be satisfied with the joy. Anyone who tells you that just loving your job is enough wants you to overlook how divergent your compensation is from the amount of effort you put in. The idea of work, by the way, as family, is another way to de-emphasize what you get from that work. It's all designed to keep us complacent, to stop us from asking questions, to convince us that if our work isn't directly and financially benefiting some person or entity with money and power, then it's not worth getting paid for. When you work in a company for people, be friends with them, get married to whatever, hang out. They're not your family. And when they say they're your family, they're trying to make you work harder and make you feel good about not getting compensated well and not getting things like freaking full health insurance and benefits, pension, whatever else it is, enough vacation to feel like a sane person. Family thing, all of it, everything. American dream, all that. It's bullshit. The system is broken. Part six. This is fun, by the way. Can the system be fixed? No, not anytime soon. But we can change it from both within and without. I'm not a person who's like, I'm not a part of this. We're all a part of the system. I don't care if you live in a cabin. You're a part of the system. We all are. To be so cynical that you distance yourself from it is unhelpful. It's helpful to you and to no one else in the world. That's why libertarianism is bullshit too. The last two installments, by the way, this is part six and it's the end of part six. We're going to go over the changes both from within and without that we can make to help fix this system. It's part seven. So what can we do? Change doesn't usually come from people who don't need it. Sometimes it does. You know, you get a rich person, doesn't need change in the world, tries to do wonderful things for the world. That could be. The people and entities with money and power have no reason to want anything to change other than pure altruism, like I just mentioned, which is why most of their efforts at progress tend to fall flat or get compromised away or take way longer than they should. Sometimes we get lucky and these powers push forward progress. Usually when this happens, it's because either, A, the issue on the table no longer has an impact on their power or money. So they're like, yeah, let's just pass it. It's fine. Or B, they've determined that pushing forward the issue will actually be more profitable or and or more beneficial to them and their reputation than blocking or stalling it. That's why for at least a time period, a lot of LGBTQ things became real, like marriage and stuff like that, because in some sense, cynically, but still, people realized we can make money off of this. And that's fine if that's the equalizer, whatever gets it forward. It's just that, unfortunately, it doesn't necessarily stick as much when you have, you know, people who think they're morally right doing ridiculous things. So what can we do? We can activate. We can compel progressives with money to support change. That's not easy. I was recently contacted by a well-known activist group to donate money to a very worthy cause. I've done this countless times. But this time I did not. Instead, I wrote them a response saying, same thing I'm saying this entire episode, we need to stop siphoning money from the working class for these causes and get progressive billionaires and companies worth billions to match or exceed the funds that conservatives spend to influence politics and policy with billions of dollars. Don't keep coming to us for 10, 20, 25, 100, 1,000 bucks. Go to the people with a ton of money. Use all of your resources and just keep pushing that, because you're going to get way more payoff from the people who can afford it. We need to demand more accountability and progress and accurate representation from our leaders. Now, before I go too far, I want to say that I know this is not the first time this stuff has been said, and I understand how difficult all of this is. And the people in the trenches doing more than just talking about it, like me, have been working tirelessly for decades at this. It's not as easy as it sounds. It's why I'm giving more than one option. I don't believe in abandoning something of value that doesn't work. Like I said, living in a cabin, that's not effective. It's why I can't stand cynics who say both parties are corrupt. Cannot stand it. Of course they are. But both parties and every other ignored party in this two-party system they are equally, you know, maybe even not equally, parts corrupt and parts trying to do the right thing. And they also have people fighting for what they believe in. No matter what side you're on, it's not all about cynicism and corruption. Just be careful. While no approach is perfect, none, and results usually fall below expectations, no matter who you are, many people in power are using your anger, your disillusionment, your disenfranchisement to convince you that they're fighting for you when they're really just fighting for themselves, and they are using you to get what they want. Because you're so angry and frustrated, listen to what they're saying. If it doesn't directly benefit you, it's a false promise. This is not a treatise on tax policy, corporate deregulation, or fiscal conservatism. That would take too long. But it's worth contemplating how all three of those things, tax policy, corporate deregulation, and fiscal conservatism, have shifted the balance of power to the top. Even though every single one of them were sold as ways to make our lives better, trickle-down theory, all of that bullshit, deregulate the market and everybody makes more, bullshit. They were all sold this way because they knew it would benefit them, not us, and that never will, never. So what can we do? Well, they say change starts local or whatever, so let's think small. Let's upend the system by subverting it. Many of us are already doing this. We're refusing to take jobs that don't pay us enough. I've refused a lot of those. Or don't offer health care or sick leave. Good. Keep refusing. We're looking for work that fits our lives and our interests. That's the way to do it. All right? Rather than taking the first thing that comes along just to make a living, that's a sick way to live. And the people who are desperate enough that they have to, my heart goes out to all of them. It hurts me. We are living. regardless of what we do, so we shouldn't have to be forced to make it. We're already living. We don't need to make a living. We're not dropping out entirely, just long enough and in enough numbers to shift some. We're not going to drop out of society entirely, is what I'm saying. Just long enough to shift the balance, shift the power back into our hands, demand, even if it's slow. But there's an even more radical way. And this is the, not the conclusion, but this is the reason I'm doing this and the reason I wrote this manifesto. And that is part eight, which is titled simply, Give Me $50,000. I got your attention, right? Does it make you want to go back and, you know, listen to everything else that I just said and see how I got here? Yeah, you heard it right. If you're someone for whom $50,000 is about as impactful as $5 is for me, then I am talking to you. I challenge you to set aside the values we've all been spoon-fed and just give me the money. Give me $50,000. I know what you're thinking. Why? Why should I just give you $50,000? What's in it for me? What am I going to do with it? What am I going to do with it? When will you get back your return on it? All the usual questions people ask when someone solicits money, you know. Reasonable, seemingly, and I'll answer those questions. But first, let me give you some context. Think of me as your closest family, or hell, just another worthy human. Don't even have to be related. Would you ask a family member in dire need what they're going to do with the money you give them? If so, then I'm not talking to you. You're hopeless. But if not, would the only way you lend them money be if they laid out an attractive return on investment or at least a payback schedule? Is that the only way you're going to lend people you love who are in need money? Do you ask every homeless person you give money to what they're going to do with it? If you don't give homeless people money, that's fine. That I don't love you for that. But I get why you might say that. You're not asking these questions because you're not giving the money. But if you're going to give somebody money, just give them the money. Don't ask them. They are individuals with lives who get to decide for themselves. My answers are these. Why? I'll tell you why. Give me $50,000. I need it and you don't. It would make a much bigger difference to me than it ever would to you. What's in it for you? Nothing other than the satisfaction of transferring money you don't need to where it's actually needed. What am I going to do with it? That's none of your business. I might, other than assuring you that it will not be used for nefarious purposes or to advocate a cause, I'm not going to tell you what I'll use it for other than to live. And keep doing what I do. This is an exchange of energy in the form of the substitute for value we call money. When will you get it back? You won't, ever. Or if you do, it'll be because I've made so much money that that sum now means nothing to me either. And even then, do you really need it back? I mean, there's a good chance I'll pay some of it forward to someone else who needs it because I put my money, I practice what I preach. I want to be part of upending the system and creating a wave of change. But the honest truth is, money should always go where it's needed more. And I need it more than you do. If you're on the other side of this, like me, or in any way in need, then consider two things. If you're on the side of needing the money, consider two things. How you respond to such an outrageous request says a lot about how you conceptualize and value money. Does asking for it without explanation make you uncomfortable? Do you feel you haven't already worked hard enough to have a decent and sustainable life? Do you think money holds some special significance or power beyond being a tool for living and that you haven't done enough to deserve it? I challenge you to examine your feelings and beliefs around money and think about changes you can make in your communication and behavior like I'm doing here. Be bold. If you can reconcile your feelings and accept that you are valuable because you are breathing and that's it, then you should be asking the unnecessarily rich for money too. Pick a random number like I did and go for it. Doesn't have to be $50,000. As for the way more than well off, those of you with an overabundance of liquidity, like if every time you sneeze, $50,000 pops out of your ass and falls to the ground without a second thought, then give me $50,000. And anybody who asks for it, give me $50,000. It'll mean more to me than it ever will to you, and you'll thank me for it. We're almost at the end, so before we take a breather, or maybe this is the breather, here are some conclusions. This conclusion section is called Last Word on $50,000 and Income Inequality. Why does income inequality, or whatever you want to call what we're enduring yet again? I mean, we've had it forever, but this is a peak the way it was a peak in the 19-teens and 20s, etc. Why does it matter? Possibly more than any other single issue. Possibly. Why did I say all this when I should just shut my mouth and release music and podcasts and all that fun, non-controversial stuff and just be happy that anybody's out there listening and whatever? Well, there are two reasons why this matters. The second, vastly more important than the first. So number one, like so many of us, I am a struggling artist. Or honestly, no, struggling any professionalist. Doesn't even matter if you're an artist or whatever it is you do. Most of us are struggling in one way or another. I devote an inordinate amount of time each week to creating things that, while appreciated, and I absolutely do love you for being out there and appreciating, they don't make the income proportionate to the work, not by far, let alone the quality of the work. And I can be honest and say that and not have any false humility and say, when you put a lot of work in to developing something and the years of experience you have before then, you should own that and feel good about the fact that you're doing something of quality that communicates to people in a way that's understandable and hopefully enjoyable. So yes, I would love it if someone or several someones gave me $50,000. If you were offered $50,000, no strings attached, from a reputable source, like, you know, not like a Nigerian prince or the mafia or the Koch brothers, wouldn't you take it too? If you knew, what would be the downside? It'd be equivalent to winning the lottery. We put all this money into the lottery, which I'm going to talk about in a second, or making bank on a game show, free money. So as jokey as this financial plea can be taken, seriously, if you're fucking rich and not an asshole, give me $50,000. Boom, done, end of story. Doing the lottery is, again, a way to give money to organizations that don't need it as much as we do, with just the prayer of a payoff, the prayer of having enough to live on. It's just like gambling. I mean, it is, but gambling's even worse because it can be more addictive. Okay, number two, why is this important? Why is income inequality important? I care about a lot of things. I talk about them sometimes in the podcast: education, gun control, healthcare, discrimination against any group, reproductive and gender freedom, and way more. But for the past decade, and probably a little longer, every single time I have hashed out any issue with anyone, including those issues I just mentioned, or just even thought through them myself, they all come down to the same thing: money. Every single one. Name one. Education, gun control, healthcare, whatever. The influence that happens with lobbyists and in the government, or in how things are kind of subtly pushed through our culture and society, it's all money. And the way things take so long to change, it's money. Far too many people with virtually unchecked power and money devote almost all of their time to not just keeping as much of it as possible, and damn whoever and whatever else might benefit from even a sliver of it that they wouldn't miss, but they also devote their time to actively taking it from those who can't afford it. And no, I'm not talking about taxes. No, I'm not a fucking libertarian who just cares about himself. Taxes are important. That's us helping each other too, but in a way that makes sense. We're giving back to the society that's there for us. We're keeping our infrastructure up. While our system is imperfect and not all our money is used the way we'd like, that's true. I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Much of what we pay in taxes goes towards supporting the less fortunate. Not the bulk, but a lot of it does. Or keeping up the infrastructure. Taxes aren't the problem so much as who is taxed and at what rate. Our taxes and our levels of income should be super fucking low. Taxes for the rich above a certain number should be super fucking high. And they used to be until all that changed. And a lot of those people wouldn't complain about it because they didn't need the money. There was that, again, that moral contract that we had in society of the people with more money were willing to give. So rare these days. What I'm talking about is not taxes. It's people in power, pass laws, deregulate, fund propaganda machines, fear and all of that, and pitting one piece of us against another, one group of us against another, and generally make every move towards siphoning money from all of us so they can have more of it. That's it. Money and power. They keep us distracted and fighting amongst ourselves while they hoard more and more. And if we haven't learned by now that better income and jobs don't trickle down, like I said before, then we haven't been paying attention or we're seriously delusional and hateful. So the people who would fight for equality in every facet of life, health, wealth, education, social freedoms, you name it, don't have the power and money and focus to do that. Not quickly. We blame each other for our struggles when we should blame the rich, or at least those rich assholes who think the only answer to their future is more, more, more. Not rich as, again, any, no group is homogenous. There are some wonderful people with money, thankfully. And there are some crappy people with no money. I get that. But on the whole, most people with money are not giving it in droves. Every social and political cause that fights for the love and acceptance of everyone, regardless of identity or personal non-harmful choices, is suppressed because money and power are hoarded by those who have an active interest in slowly draining and killing us. There are so many people who would rather see various minority groups just dead, just non-existent. And this is why anyone who says they're a social liberal but a fiscal conservative is a fucking hypocrite. You can't be both. It's like saying you care about the garden in your backyard but refuse to waste water on it. That's exactly what it is. If you really care and are a true social liberal, you'd understand that no change is possible without some combination of money and power, without giving some of that money to where it's needed. And that goes for every cause I've mentioned and hundreds more. It's almost as simple as put your money where your mouth is. Don't fool yourself. Trace any social improvement back to its source and money is going to be there. So sure, I'd love a nice chunk of cash dropped at my doorstep, wrapped in paper with a handwritten heart on it. Give me $50,000 if you have it and it doesn't mean anything to you. I would love that. But way more important than me getting any money or any individual artist getting any money, we need to drastically and quickly reverse the course we've been on for at least 50 years. We need to re-regulate business, re-establish higher tax rates for the well-off and disturbingly rich, and reform how our government operates. So regardless of what side of any fence you're on, we can all benefit. Was I as heated and passionate as you thought I would be reading that? That's the whole thing. As again, I wrote that a couple years ago and I still believe it. Some conclusions. This is not just about politics. Artists do need support. That's why it's part of music is not a genre. And we shouldn't have to ask people who don't have that much money, who also need support. Again, you Patreon people are amazing, and the people who listen to my music and buy it and are on Bandcamp, but we shouldn't have to ask you. But we do have to ask, which is why I'm imploring you to do two things. One is spread this word. Spread this podcast. If you would rather spread it in the text, take the link. Spread the link to the manifesto in text. Either however you want to do it, copy it, spread parts of it yourself, spread quotes. And the second thing is, if you do have any at all, any discretionary income, please check my links. The store where I sell t-shirts, you're going to get something for it, t-shirts, mugs, long sleeve, hoodies, whatever. I would love it if you were a patron of mine. The Bandcamp link where you can support my music and so many other artists' music directly. The patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, where you're getting exclusive and bonuses and things and just the joy, again, of supporting somebody who needs it, who's doing hard work. Or if you just want to make a donation to PayPal, go to youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre. The PayPal link is there. And if you can't afford anything at all, share this on social. Like I said, listen. Listen to the music I share. Add the playlists. Like and subscribe on YouTube, all the things that everybody asks you to do. Talk about the podcast. Talk about Rex Music with others. There's so many things you can do that don't require money, and I appreciate those just as much. I really, really do, no matter what I've said. Also, sign up at my website, nickdimatteo.com/contact. Send me your email. It's free, and you get a newsletter like once or twice a month with some cool stuff. That's it. No featured songs, just the featured links. And, you know, you get to read the manifesto, whatever other links you want over there, and the t-shirt. Again, I don't have it, but it's give me $50,000. It's kind of a fun shirt to wear out. I'm really excited to get it because it's going to get one hell of a response from people who are walk by and you and looking at it. Thank you for hanging with me for this weird ass PopFest. That's one of a kind that I was really excited to share with you. I hope if you missed anything, go back and listen to it or read the text. And you kind of, I would love to hear your opinions because it's always objectives here, music, conversation, connection. And I know that this is going to elicit a lot of opinions. So thanks again. And thank you for PodFest, the two PodFest for releasing.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I spoke too soon. Okay. Goodbye. Goodbye. Bye. Bye.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.